Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is writer, playwright, and educator Karen Levis. Levis received her BA from Tufts University and an MFA in creative writing from the New School University. She studied acting at the Eugene O'Neill Theater and the Moscow Art Theater, and she is a student advisor and adjunct professor in the New School University's Creative Writing for Children and Young Adults MFA program. She's published short stories, short plays, and last fall her first picture book, the award-winning Stuck with the Blues, was published by Houghton, Mifflin, and Harcourt. And welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you studied both creative writing and theater. Did you think you were going to go into both professions? How did that all...
I delusionally did think that I was going to go into both. I think I started out when I was very young. Writing probably always came first. Mm-hmm. I can remember, I think it was in first or second grade, the question, what do you want to be? And I was going to be an author, and I was going to write my first few books by the end of, I think, fourth grade. Not quite happen.
So writing, huh?
Yeah, but I fell in love with theater very young. My parents took me quite a bit, which had a big impact on me.
Yeah. I'll bet being interested in theater has informed some of your writing, too.
Absolutely.
Obviously, it's a help to know how to get into the character.
Absolutely. I mean, I think my theater background is invaluable to me, and in everything I do, in my writing. I developed a whole class, actually, about using...
Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Techniques.
We're absolutely going to talk about that, yeah.
But it's, I think most of what I learned from writing actually came first from my theater background in a lot of ways, and certainly the way I use it now in my teaching and the education work, and I love doing that. And I also think... And just as a person, I think it really helped me.
Well, I think theater helps people to learn how to communicate, too. And obviously writing is another way of translating that. Now, you write for kids, teens, and adults. Now, is it difficult to change voices to suit these different comprehension levels and so on?
I don't think I think about it. I think the reason I write for all different is simply because those voices will just sort of come to me. I think it's also my life runs into a lot of different worlds, and so I get inspired by the different worlds and the different people and situations that I'm in. So I tend not to, it doesn't feel difficult because I write, I'm never sitting down and saying, now I'm going to write for an adult or now I'm going to write this. I just sort of write what the story that, you know, is there is, and the voice that's sort of in my head is driving me to write, and then, you know, whoever the audience ends up being, that's who the audience ends up being. And certainly in revision, once you're sort of more aware of who your audience is, you might think about it a little bit more and tweak and hone. But
I've always thought it was a particular skill to be able to get in touch with what children would understand, and especially making children laugh, which is a good way of teaching, obviously. So I think that's pretty interesting that you can still stay in touch with the child. I've talked to other children's book writers, and one of them said, I just never grew up, Tish. That's the thing.
Yeah, a lot of them, and I hang out now with quite a few who would definitely, I think, fit into that or consider that we all fit into that category. I think also I've just always loved talking to kids. So even as I started working with kids in college and actually in high school. High school is my first working with special education camp, summer camp.
Oh, yeah.
And so I just think that even as I was growing up, I never stopped having a toe in the world of kids. So I think that I've just never stopped being in those sort of conversations. And maybe, plus my childhood was really memorable to me, and I really... A lot of the experiences and the people I knew and things that happened to me really were very crystal clear to me for a very long time.
Yeah, that's fun to be able to translate that into a universal, too. You know, I mean, as kids, we think we're having unique lives, and we really are. We have stories to share that people will want to identify with.
Yeah, and that's why I fell in love with reading. I read, I think it was Ramona Quimby was one of those particular books where it was just like, you know, she was different from me, and yet there were similar, you know, there was just her reactions and her experiences were so familiar as well that it just was this amazing experience of feeling like, you know, the world just sort of opens up and there's somebody somewhere, you don't know what they look like, you don't know how old they are, and they're writing this thing that you're just going, yeah, you know, and it's this amazing experience.
Yeah, I think it makes kids be able to better feel at home in the world if they can find books that they can identify with like that. Mm-hmm. Now, you teach arts education and have for many years. I think it's really interesting how you try to teach emotional and social skills through the arts. Talk to us a little bit more about how that works for you.
Yeah, I fell into that, I guess, in college too. I was doing children's theater, which I learned a lot. And then my first job, right, sort of while I was finishing college, was doing a one-woman show about dating violence that went to high schools. And this was when I was acting as well, and this was a big learning experience. But as soon as I started doing that, it just made sense that this is what I'd want to do. I think that acting and theater and writing and all of these things are uniquely perfect to teach sort of all of these skills we need as people, no matter what you do, in terms of self-awareness, self-discipline, how to, you know, relate to each other, communication, confidence, especially to learn how to fail and fail and then keep going, all of those things. So,
yeah.
So I really just feel that I love using it, and I think it should, honestly, I feel like it should be a required course.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and arts is also a gentle way of teaching people skills without hitting them over the head with what one might call propaganda.
No, they don't even realize, you know, I mean, some, depending what age, and I work with all age groups, but they don't necessarily see it then as learning or, I mean, they do because we talk about it, but it's fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun, and it's this weird thing like, oh my goodness, I'm allowed to have fun and learn something. And you can use it to teach anything from the interpersonal, which is my personal, you know, that's my personal favorite thing to do, but you can also use it to teach academics.
I know.
All these things.
I know. People are more comfortable when they're having fun, and therefore they can take in information better without that anxiety that sometimes happens in schools.
Yeah, it opens up. They're able to collaborate. I get to often, you know, I'll walk into a class and a teacher, I don't like to find out too much about the students before I walk in. I usually just ask for anything. If there's a child who has something physically going on that I should just know in terms of preparing the lesson, or something really extreme that has happened to a student, you know, whether it's been a death in the family, a fight, or something I really should be aware of.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't like to know too much, but I'll still get teachers who will sort of want to tell me, you know, warn me about the real behavior problem in the class, or lot of times I'm with, you know, entire classes, and those students will often be the ones who become the stars of the show.
I can imagine that. Now let's get to your book, your first children's picture book called Stuck with the Blues, and blues is spelled B-L-O-O-Z.
Yep.
Talk to us about where this idea came from. It's about coping with sadness.
Yeah. This is one that I actually really know when it was. I was working in an elementary school, and I was actually working as a one-to-one aide in one of the classrooms. So I got to be with this one group of kids for 2 years. And one day, one student was just sort of sniffling as she walked down the stairs, and she was really sad, and she was a real quirky and real fun student. And we sat down, and I pulled her over, and we just had this conversation about how she was feeling, and she was, it was just a really remarkable conversation because she was asking herself all these questions. She was asking, am I sick? No. Am I tired? No. Do I miss my mom? Kind of, but that's not it. And she really was being very reflective about it, and we had this whole conversation, and then she engaged with me where I said, well, where are you feeling it in your body? And she would sort of point to places, and I'd say, you know, well, you know, is it squishy or is it sharp? And we had this great conversation, and through that conversation, she didn't, you know, certainly didn't just snap out of it, but she was able to get up off the stairs, and we walked down, and then I think she liked to paint, so we set her up with some paints. And I just was so struck by that conversation and just felt that this is a feeling that so many kids have, adults have, I have, and it's the one that we feel like we're not supposed to talk about. So it just stuck with me.
I love it. Yeah. I love the way you did this book, because the blues is this squishy little blue guy, and then he, you know, waddles around.
And
it's interesting that you make the emotion into a character.
Thanks,
Yeah, I think that was very interesting. The illustrator for the book is John Davis. Tell me how you work with an illustrator. Did you have any kind of input?
I don't. The way it usually works, as far as I've learned, is that if you are the writer of a picture book, you are submitting your manuscript to the publisher, and if you are lucky enough to find a publisher and an editor who will take you on, then they they work to find the right illustrator for the project. And it's very collaborative. To me, it was like theater, actually. And I enjoy that sort of submitting your work for someone else to then make it their own and interpret. And I lucked out. I mean, I really... I waited a very long time for this to happen. This took about 10 years for me.
Really?
Yes.
My goodness.
Yes. I tell the students, I show them, I bring in all my rejection letters when I visit schools and sort of tell them the long haul.
But you never gave up.
No. I mean, in small moments, I did.
but the big moments are the ones that count.
Yeah, but I did keep going. And then I really was so fortunate. My editor really, when I submitted it, it was almost like an afterthought. I thought at this point, it wasn't going to happen. I'd had some really good comments on it previously, but a lot of times what you said in terms of the fact that I personified sadness, some of the really great publishers who had shown interest earlier were afraid that it was too sophisticated for kids, which...
That's why the illustrations are so important in a picture book, you know?
And so my editor saw it, and she realized that that wasn't true. And I'm really open to direction and things, but that was something I was really stuck on. I said, no, I work with these kids. I know that this is what kids do. They take their imagination and they personify things and their emotions. And
kids are more sophisticated than people think they are, you know, just because they're not articulating it.
Yeah. So, what's amazing. And then, John Davis, I mean, it was incredible because I had sort of this idea in my head of what it might look like, but I'm not writing any notes about it at all. And it was as if he'd crept into my brain and seen these sort of pathetic attempts of trying to visualize
the blues. Yeah.
And then he just absolutely took and did exactly what I didn't even have the capability to dream it would look like. And everything from the details he put him in this old-time, you know, stripy romper, which just was so right for the character.
Oh, it totally enhances the book. And I thought, wow, you know, at first when you sent me the book, I thought, oh, okay, another children's book about sadness. And then the blues was a character. I loved it. It has a little tiny face and a big bubble body.
Yeah, I had this great experience where they showed me the first sort of character sketch that John had done. Because we don't collaborate then in between. We have corresponded afterwards, but I'm not giving him notes in any way. It's my editor, the art director over at Harcourt. And I saw one character sketch, and I was so thrilled and so happy. And so for the months that he was working, I know a lot of authors will be nervous and waiting, and I was just thrilled, and I couldn't wait because I knew it was going to just be amazing.
Yeah.
And the
kids you were lucky.
Just respond so incredibly well to it. And he added, you know, the humor that I hoped would be in there so that though we're talking about sadness and all these things, there's a lot of laughs when the kids are reading the book. And
Did you picture the little girl character in it who's the one who's dealing with the sadness? Did you picture what she'd look like? She's a cute little blonde girl.
Yeah, well, that's what's so interesting is because you see her as a girl, and I tend to because that's who inspired it. But what's so interesting is, you know, I wrote the book in the first person, which also at some points was questioned because that's not necessarily, I think, a very popular thing to do right now, it seems, even though it has been done definitely way before me. In part, that's just how it came to me, but also in part because I wanted it to not necessarily be, you know, a certain gender, and I want it to be a bit universal. And so John created this character who many of the kids and adults, some people see it as a girl, some people see it as a boy.
Really?
And so I loved that. And that was also something I hadn't written in a note or anywhere, but was really thrilled that he did that. It has, you know, I do school visits, and so there's a conversation that I was hoping would happen, and that often does happen, but what's been interesting are the conversations that I wasn't anticipating, and that's one of them, where often the kids will ask me, is it a girl, is it a boy? And then I'll flip it around and say, well, you know, what do you think? And, you know, why do you think that John and I decided to sort of leave that up to you? And I have had 5-year-old students be able to say, well, it's because girls get sad and boys get sad. And you didn't want anybody to feel left out.
Oh, that's so cute. Oh, that is so funny. Now you're going to have to start taking some kind of poll about why psychologically some of us think it's a girl and some think it's a boy. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the experience you come to it. One hilarious answer was I had one little boy who said to me, now that I know that John Davis is from the UK, I realized that the character might be a boy because British boys have hair like that.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Karen Levis. We're talking about her picture book and her work as a teacher, and her book is called Stuck with the Blues. I also want to talk to you a little bit about how you teach programs about bullying, about gangs. So, to tell us how you approach those. Is it with humor in the arts as well?
Yeah, and that is something I haven't done as much lately. That was for, I do still do it. It depends on the program. I was working with a couple different nonprofit organizations in the city that I go into the school, and we will do work with students about self-awareness, self-management, relationships, and we'll design it for what they need. So if we're in a school where there's a lot of problems with gangs, we'll sort of design things around that and definitely use role play and theater games to do that. And that work all informed then what I've now sort of been able to create with my book and the program. It really taught me a lot of techniques and things that you can use to distance subjects from students in order to bring them close to it.
I would think it'd be easier for kids to use acting as the premise.
Oh yeah, and they have a blast, and you know, we get that, you know, you get them up acting out a scenario, and then what happens is because they're actually going through something, so if they're working something out about a problem with a friend, right? They're actually practicing something. So then in real life, there's actually a chance that they might be able to use those tools rather than if you just teach it, put it on a blackboard. Even if you just talk about it, it's not as effective as if, you know, you have to practice. It's like a dancer, right? You practice.
You know, it's almost like the opposite of theater training, because, you know, when you're being trained to specifically act, you're supposed to take things from your real life and bring them into the acting. This way, kids are learning acting to use in real life. It's very interesting.
Yeah, and it's a muscle, just like dancers and martial artists, that if you practice it, then it's there when you need it. And so I think that's what's so effective. And so when I, you know, even when I go in with blues, I have a couple different workshops I do, and part of it is to have the kids practice asking questions of themselves, you know, about how they're feeling. And, you know, we'll do it in this very group setting, and they're asking questions to the blues, right? But then hopefully that carries over, and the next time they're feeling sad, they're able to actually ask that question out loud to someone else or to themselves.
Yeah, it's a great tool. I'm sure it is. I do want to talk to you about your original workshop called Act Like a Writer, which brings us right into that from this conversation. Talk to us about what that is.
Yeah, that was something that came just out of the fact that I felt like I got a lot of my writing skills out of acting. And so while I was at New School for one of my thesis projects, I actually interviewed different writers who also had acting training backgrounds to see if, you know, I couldn't imagine that I was the only one using my acting training. And a lot of people were. And so I used to play around with some of my grad school friends and sort of torture them with some exercises I used for myself, but I wanted to see if other people would. So it's mostly grounded in, I have a great teacher named Leonard Petit who teaches Michael Chekhov technique, and it's a really psychophysical acting technique that uses image and really has the idea that you can't demand an emotion, but you can create an environment to coax it out, as well as just a lot of other really wonderful principles that are really useful for writers. So for Act Like a Writer, I have taken a lot of these principles, a lot of these exercises and improv games, and I've translated them for writers onto the page. And it's been really, the first time I did it was a total experiment. And I had poets, nonfiction writers, theater people, fiction writers, and I thought, this is going to work on maybe some of them. And I had a group of 25 people, and everyone responded really positively and got something out of it.
Wow.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's like using another side of your brain to bring out your creativity. Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. So is there any way you can hone in on how that would work with, like, a poet coming in? How would that work?
Well,
like acting out a piece of writing?
No. So what it is we work on these... it's sort of hard to, it's one of those things that's hard to explain because it's very on your feet. But what it is it's actually very craft-oriented. So it's playing with, it's finding ways to play with language by, so for example, one of the basic things we work with qualities, so quality of sort of legato and staccato, and how you can actually purposely take some tools and play with them in order to inspire your writing and see how it actually might affect the form that you choose. So if I had a poet come in and we did these exercises, and it would affect the way whether they were writing in sort of longer phrases or using shorter phrases. With fiction writers, it would greatly change the way they use voice.
What a that sounds like a really fascinating. Hope you can maybe bring one of those workshops up here sometime.
I'd love to.
As somebody who has been teaching in the arts, have you had to incorporate high tech, you know,
I am very
social media stuff into your teaching? You know, I mean, like Twitter. I mean, you tell the kids, okay, tell me how you feel in 140 characters. You know, have you used those kinds of techniques?
I tend to stay really sort of low tech in my teaching with kids, mostly because what I'm there to do usually is to teach interpersonal social things. So I really do keep it pretty bare bones. And sometimes I've felt actually, oh no, I need to kind of tech it up more. And really the response from teachers I have is actually that they really appreciate that, because there seems to be a real loss of in those interpersonal skills in students that they're noticing more and more, just that it's even harder. It's always been hard for teenagers to make eye contact, but it seems even more so. And so that's been really, I think, appreciated.
So it's a way to relearn the skills we should have learned before the high-tech era, perhaps.
Yeah. That said, I've had to sort of learn it as an author. I've had to now, you know, do more on social media, and I got on Twitter for the book and try and use it. And I think they're all really interesting forms to use, and it's just about how you want to use it.
Yeah. But I've had so many educators on and people who work with kids talking about how kids are, losing the ability to have interpersonal relationships and to make eye contact and to have conversations. So that's really interesting that you would still use old-fashioned tools.
Yeah, and mostly they seem to really appreciate it. Too. I mean, usually because I'm getting them up off their feet, they have a lot of choice in what we do, so they kind of get to own their own learning at that time. But I do think that they really appreciate it. And I don't think that kids have lost the ability. I think that we just have created a world where they get less practice.
That makes sense too. And do you think you have another book in you that's going to be like the blues? Like,
I do.
You know, battling the bullies or getting rid of them.
I have a few. I definitely am always working, and I have a few that are in various stages.
Yeah, I can see this being kind of a series.
To the world.
Yeah, using different emotions. Oh, how interesting. You've written short plays. Tell us about that craft. That's an entirely different craft from children's book writing, I would think.
I guess. I don't think about them as very different somehow. And actually, I think playwriting and picture book writing or at least the 10-minute play, there's a similarity in terms of you're trying to be very concise and you're trying to use a really small form to get your story across and to get your thoughts. So for me, I think they work a slightly similar skill sometimes. Mm-hmm. The short plays I have are for adults mostly at the moment. Yeah.
To tell us one of your favorites. To tell us what it's about.
Oh, I don't know favorites. But the most recent one I had was done as part of the Samuel French Off-Broadway Festival last year, and that one this will show similarity in my writing. It's about two co-workers who there develops this tension between them, and they're trying to avoid it, and so there's a character that is the elephant in the room, and I made it an actual elephant in the room, and there's a tango number with the elephant. So it was fun for me to see a director put up, and I have a really wonderful director.
Would you call it an absurdist play? Does it have a label?
I don't know if it has a label. It's just, it's one of those just slightly lifted from reality, I think. But I hadn't actually thought about it until I saw it up there, and everybody else was like, oh, another, here you are again. You put the elephant, you have the blues, you just like,
you're stuck
personifying these sort of thoughts and emotions, which that honestly I think has been since I was a little kid. Yeah, I've always done that.
Well, you studied acting. Did you ever do any real straight acting in anywhere?
No.
Mainly just writing now, huh?
Yeah, I really sort of realized very quickly that the career, as much as I love the craft of acting and I really enjoyed doing it and studying it, and it's also one of my just, I think, favorite ways of relating with people is to work on a play and a theater piece. I just feel like cuts out the small talk, and you're talking about things that really matter, and you're working both on yourself but also talking about the world at the same time. So I loved that, but I realized very quickly on that I didn't, the career of it wasn't something I wanted. And, you know, I had acting teachers who very smartly advised, if you can live without it, do anything else. And so I tried living without it, and I don't live without it. I use it in, obviously, in my teaching and in my writing, and that is actually how I want to have it.
Have you gone around and given readings of this picture book? And to tell us how the kids have reacted to it.
Oh, that's my favorite thing, is I love to do school visits or organizations, wherever, because then I get to see how they're reacting, and, you know, and it's been fabulous. They really, so I do an interactive reading where the kids are sitting in a group and they're sort of responding with me as I read. I have places where then we act out parts of the book together. And then at the end, the students will always, I ask them to tell me what they do when they're feeling blue. And I have an acting game where they do that out. And then I have other workshops that go deeper into the sort of emotional workshop. And the kids' reactions have been fabulous, and they get it. You know, like I was saying, the publishers who thought that it was too sophisticated. And in almost every class I visited, I'll have a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, 7-year-old who not all of them can articulate it, but there's always one or two can actually say, I think that the blues comes when she's feeling sad, and it's really, you know, it's her blobby feeling, and that's why it goes away in the end, because, you know, she doesn't need him anymore, and some version of that.
You know, I noticed on your blog that you have a list of kids saying what they do when they get the blues.
Yeah.
I thought that was the cutest thing.
Yeah, I keep track of what they say, you know, because you get things like they have great suggestions, everything from I go, you know, do karate in the studio, to I get a hug from my mom, to I water my Christmas tree.
Yeah, I love it. I lay in bed and just think. Yep. I love that one,
I look at laughing babies. They come up with whatever it is that they actually do, and then they remind it and they draw a picture of it, and I have them bring it home so they can remember. And then I like to share it because it's helpful for everyone to have all of these sort of things to remember that you might be able to do. And I actually totally sometimes when I'm feeling bummed out, I'll go to my little list of the things that the students have said, and the ones that I can actually do, I might go try, you know, cut things out of paper.
Well, that's the thing that I like about your book, too. The ending is that it will pass. Mm-hmm. And you will see the bright, sunny day again. That's wonderful. We're almost out of time, Karen. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us briefly what we might expect from you next, or do you want to keep it a secret? Okay.
I always like to keep it under wraps until it's actually out there.
Okay. How about some contact information for people?
Oh, sure. Well, my website is karenlevis.com. It's CarenLevis.com. And you can also get in touch with me by email. It's writetokaren@gmail.com. So it's writecaron@gmail.com.
That's great. Well, I hope people will get in touch with you.
Yeah, I love doing school visits. So anyone who wants to bring me in is always a pleasure.
And the book is wonderful. I mean, this is an era when a lot of people need to be cheered up, and this book is wonderful. Okay. It doesn't deny that people get sad, but it shows you there's going to be a bright day afterwards. I love it.
Thank you.
So, Karen Levis, thank you so much for joining us. And the book is called Stuck with the Blues. Thank you for joining us, Karen.
Thank you so much.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.